This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Thursday, October 24th. Here are some things I would never put in my screenplay because the plot would be dismissed as excessively far-fetched. Two immigrants from Ukraine named Lev and Igor start businesses called Mafia Rave and Fraud Guarantee. Mafia Rave and Fraud Guarantee. Lev and Igor get arrested and charged with making illegal campaign donations to American politicians to help some of their clients back in Ukraine. And then in court, they claim executive privilege from producing needed evidence. Why? Because the lawyer who represents Lev and Igor also represents the President of the United States. No one would believe that plot from my movie, right? So, okay, let's put that story aside for a moment and try another one. In that same courthouse where the founders of Mafia Rave and Fraud Guarantee are claiming executive privilege as if they were President of the United States, the actual President of the United States is claiming that if he committed murder with a gun on a crowded public street, he could not be sent to prison for his crime. He couldn't even be indicted for his crime. And, new wrinkle, important to my screenplay, he couldn't even be investigated for shooting someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York City. Couldn't even be investigated for it. Now, if that excessively far-fetched plot sounds vaguely familiar, maybe it's because you remember this.
I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
Donald Trump from his 2016 campaign, you know that clip, but all he claimed there was that if he shot someone on Fifth Avenue, his supporters would still vote for him, never mind what that says about his supporters. He didn't claim that he couldn't be found guilty of the murder or even charged with the murder or even investigated for the murder on Fifth Avenue. But yesterday in court, that's exactly what the president's lawyer claimed when asked by a federal judge named Denny Chin.
What's your view on the Fifth Avenue example? Local authorities couldn't investigate? They couldn't do anything about it?
I think once a president is removed from office, any local authority, this is not a permanent immunity.
Well, I'm talking about while in office.
No.
That's the hypo. Nothing could be done. That's your position.
That is correct.
That is correct, said Trump's lawyer, William Consovoy, to federal appeals court judge Denny Chin. Far-fetched screenplay, meet 2019 reality. By the way, I haven't forgotten about Lev and Igor, but file them for a minute. With me now, Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz, co-hosts of the WNYC podcast Trump Inc., which covers the intersection between the president's private businesses and America's public interest. Hi, Andrea. Hi, Ilya.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
You were in that federal courtroom yesterday?
Yeah, you know, yesterday was one of those days where I kept having to check my notes and check the tape to make sure what I thought had just happened had actually happened. But yes, Trump's lawyer did say those things in arguments before the Second Circuit Court of Appeals about whether the president can be investigated by the Manhattan DA.
Okay, Ilya, why did this come up? The president has done many things, but as far as I know, he has never shot anyone on Fifth Avenue.
Why it came up? Well, at issue in this case, and this is really a case that Andrew is a little more focused on than I am, but the key issue in this case is whether District Attorney Cy Vance can investigate Trump and the Trump Organization and people around him over the hush money payments that he made in connection with Stormy Daniels. We know that the Southern District of New York federal prosecutors already took a look at it and decided that under Justice Department policy, they can't go further with that. But Cy Vance is not bound by that policy, and he wants to learn more. And basically, please fill in here, Andrea, at any point, what was going on here is Trump is countersuing Vance to stop his probe and basically assert sort of the broadest executive privilege assertion that I've ever heard of.
Right. I mean, one of the very interesting things about this, and I should say what Vance has impaneled a grand jury, and they have sought and have actually received some documents from the Trump Organization. But what caused this particular lawsuit was when they asked for Trump's tax returns. And they were told by Trump's legal team, nope, you're not going to get those. And Vance persisted and Trump sued. Now, Trump sued in federal court and his case was dismissed. The federal judge said the case was repugnant to the Constitution. And then Trump appealed, and that's why he's in the Second Circuit. One of the extremely interesting wrinkles is that in a courtroom in Manhattan, Trump's private attorneys are arguing the only valid forum for holding a president to account is an impeachment hearing, at the same time that the president's lawyers in Washington are arguing that the impeachment hearing is a kangaroo court. So the logical outcome of that is that there is no accountability, according to Trump, for a president so long as he is a sitting president.
So let me see if I've got this right so far. Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, is in prison for financial fraud related to the hush money that he paid on Trump's behalf to Stormy Daniels during the 2016 campaign, as directed by Trump.
I mean, you can't make any of this.
And somehow we
your Hollywood screenplay.
And we get from that to the Manhattan District Attorney issuing a subpoena for several years of Trump's tax returns in connection with that story.
With that, right, because it's a possible felony in New York. We know from documents that were released in conjunction with the investigation of Cohen that the Trump Organization said that the payment to Cohen was a legal retainer. Well, that's a lie. It was a hush money payment. And if you falsify business records in New York, that is potentially a felony because there are tax implications.
Now, you report that this goes even further. I didn't even try to put this one into my screenplay, that Trump is claiming that even his businesses can't be investigated while he's president of the United States, correct?
That is correct. And this was such an amazing thing yesterday about the argument. I almost couldn't believe it when the Trump lawyer said, because the judge said, well, what about the organizations? These are separate organizations that exist. They function. They run. They are independent of the president. They are independent of the White House. And Trump's lawyer argued, no, they're solely owned by the president. Therefore, they too are covered by this immunity. So,
but wait. If they're solely owned, wholly owned by the president, didn't he just make an argument last week that he could have the G7 at his Miami Doral resort because he wouldn't profit from it?
Correct. So this is what he has not divested from his companies, which is the entire sort of animating factor behind Trump Inc. podcast, is sort of investigating the implications of that. So he hasn't divested. He still profits. This has obviously been the subject of much criticism involving the Doral and other things recently. And at the same time, his lawyers are arguing, well, because he didn't divest, his whole business is immune. And also third parties, other people that work at the Trump Organization or other unnamed third parties are also immune from investigation so long as Trump is in the Oval Office.
So it's whatever argument is convenient at that exact moment.
So if the Trump Organization committed fraud, let's say, against guests at Trump's Doral Resort, the Trump Hotel couldn't be investigated under this claim.
Correct. Or the story that we have on that Trump Inc. that dropped last week, where he made different sets of representations to his investors and to New York City tax authorities. Well, you're not allowed to lie to tax authorities and you're not allowed to lie to investors. And those could be crimes. Under this theory, even though this happened and was happening right up and through 2017, very recently, while he was in the White House, these two are things that could not be criminally prosecuted, or I keep saying prosecuted, but investigated.
Even investigated.
Even investigated, even looked at.
Now, I gather that both sides in this, the Manhattan DA and the president, have agreed to try to put the issue on hold while they try to fast track this question to the United States Supreme Court. Ilya, do you know how that would work?
Well, it does seem that both sides want to get it to the court soon and want to get an answer soon. I think what's a really interesting question is whether the court is going to see this the same way that the last federal court, last federal judge to review this claim did, who called it, as Andrea said, repugnant, because, you know, we've been talking about a constitutional crisis for a really long time. This is like a core constitutional issue, is the extent of executive power.
So when can we expect to hear, if you guys have any idea? I realize you're not lawyers or court reporters or constitutional scholars. Any idea, though, when we might hear from the Supreme Court if they will take this case, and if they do, when they will rule on it?
Well, there's a step before that, which is that the Second Circuit Court of Appeals panel that heard the case yesterday will issue a ruling. So they will either affirm the district court's dismissal of the case, or they will overturn it. Now, if they affirm it, almost certainly Trump will then go up to the Supreme Court. And what has happened is the Manhattan DA has come to an agreement to stay his subpoena. So he said, okay, I'm not going to go to court. I'm not going to litigate this issue of whether I'm entitled to get your taxes now. We will let this go through the courts, but only if the Supreme Court hears it in a very rapid way. So that is sort of the pressure from DA Vance's end to get it to the Supreme Court quickly, if indeed that goes there. But there is at least one level at the appeals court, at least one decision at the appeals court level before it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court. But it is, I've now been in followed three of these tax cases, and I think this is the most fundamental to the rule of law, because it's so broad and so sweeping, and really goes to the question of whether any crime the president has committed can be adjudicated in our court system. So when it goes to the Supreme Court, I think it will be very telling about the state of our democracy, depending on what that ruling is.
Okay, now we get to Lev and Igor. You didn't think I'd forget them, did you? Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, they were in the same courthouse, Ilya, as the president's lawyer was arguing immunity from first-degree murder?
That's right. So while Andrea was on the, I believe, 17th floor hearing the case that we've just been discussing, I was waiting to enter Judge Paul Etkin's courtroom, which is on the 5th floor. And this is their first appearance in that courtroom in this case since they were arrested on charges of circumventing campaign finance laws. What they are charged with is basically using straw donors and shell companies to make a series of really large campaign contributions to a variety of Republican candidates and causes and groups in the year 2018. As far as that goes, that doesn't seem necessarily to tie back to the impeachment inquiry or Rudy Giuliani, but wait, because Rudy's not mentioned anywhere in the indictment, but wait, because we know that around that same time frame, they started working with Rudy to unearth some kind of dirt around Joe Biden, or at least create a story around Joe Biden and his son, Hunter Biden, who worked for a Ukrainian energy company. And critically, in the indictment, it says that Parnas and Fruman were aiming to get the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine removed. And that's the closest tie that we have in that indictment to the impeachment inquiry, mm-hmm. which is also seeking documents and testimony from these two men. So to be in this court, and, you know, I was in Ukraine just 3 weeks ago when these guys were sort of, their faces were splashed all over the news, and we're starting to try to understand who they are through Facebook posts and Instagram posts. And here they are all of a sudden in the flesh. They're not wearing casual clothes anymore, making thumbs up in posed photos with Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. and Tommy Hicks, the head of the RNC. No, they're in court. They're wearing nice suits. They have their American flag lapel pins. They have very good lawyers. And they are pleading not guilty.
And also, as if, let me just jump in here, because as if they were president of the United States, they were arguing for executive privilege regarding certain pieces of evidence?
Yeah, so their executive privilege argument is this. It's that they did work for Rudy Giuliani as Rudy Giuliani was representing Donald Trump, the president of the United States. And one of an attorney who represented them, John Dowd, who also, by the way, represented Donald Trump at one time in the Mueller probe, told Congress in a letter that Parnas and Fruman did work for Rudy in his capacity as the president's lawyer. So what we heard yesterday from Parnas's lawyer when the judge turned the proceeding to the question of discovery, because prosecutors are still seeking documents and information, Parnas's lawyer said, wait, there's an issue, and I want to make sure this court is aware of it, which is there could be an assertion of executive privilege or attorney-client privilege because of the role that my client played working for Rudy. So in effect, we have this.
So can you get specific? I get it that they were involved with Rudy Giuliani and Giuliani was also representing the president. But what evidence in Lev and Igor's cases would have been part of a conversation between Rudy Giuliani and the president of the United States.
Well, they did not get specific, and Lev and Igor are businessmen, I guess, is probably the best shorthand. They're not attorneys. We know that Lev Parnas has done some interpreting in another legal case, so maybe he was involved in interpreting documents. We don't know. I also just wanted to put a little asterisk on something you said at the beginning. Lev Parnas was born in Ukraine. Igor Fruman was born in Belarus.
Forgive me.
If I could also just add about the courtroom yesterday. So after the Trump v. Vance case was over, I took the elevator downstairs and joined Ilya in the courtroom on the fifth floor. And the judge said, welcome to the Southern District. You are here in the Southern District. Well, who was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District? Obviously, Rudy Giuliani. But then it was so striking when Rudy Giuliani came up by name in this argument about executive privilege. So there, here he is in the first court proceeding in his old jurisdiction where he used to prosecute cases. And the defense attorneys are saying, my client's relationship with Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal attorney, could complicate the defense of our case.
And the judge seemed genuinely surprised. I don't think he said literally the words "Wait, what?" But that was basically the sentiment behind his response. And the lawyer said, "Yes, my client worked for Rudy."
It sounds like it was a whole "Wait, what?" day.
Yes,
Andrea, do I see that you have a Parnas?
Yes. So after the court hearing, Parnas and his lawyer came outside, and Parnas made a very brief statement. Here it is.
Good afternoon, everybody. Many false things have been said about me and my family in the press and media recently. I look forward to defending myself vigorously in court, and I'm certain that in the time, truth will be revealed, and I will be vindicated. In the end, I put my faith in God. Thank you.
What is the nature of your work for Rudy Giuliani, Mr.?
So he laughed.
Somebody was asking there at the end, what was the nature of your work
right.
for Rudy
he didn't,
Giuliani?
He just read the statement and he didn't take any questions. It did seem from what happened in the court proceeding, I mean, there's been a lot of speculation about the Southern District's potential investigation of Rudy Giuliani and whether that's going to be rapid. It seems like this case could potentially take a very long time. They mentioned, 50 bank accounts, numerous electronic devices, social media accounts, many documents that they're going to be requiring before their next court hearing on December 2nd. So there's a lot for them to go through.
Ilya, didn't Lev and Igor's biggest suspect campaign donation, $325,000, I think, go to a Donald Trump super PAC?
Yes, America First. This is the Donald Trump super PAC. So if you want to put your money on outside spending that is very closely Trump-aligned and Trump-friendly, that is the place to go. And many people from Trump world, particularly from the 2016 campaign, went directly from the campaign or directly from the inauguration in some cases to working for America First. America First is still in action, still exists, and they have said that they did all necessary due diligence on their donations. They have. I wish that they would be more specific because the particular donation in question, $325,000, came from a company called Global Energy Partners. It might have been producers, GEP. GEP was set up within days of the donation being made. So even a cursory search of GEP would provoke questions as to whether this was a real company or a shell company, whether this was a real global energy player or a straw company, just sort of a thing.
To make illegal straw donations.
And what they're also accused of in the complaint is routing money from a Russian businessman to a variety of different candidates in connection with a recreational marijuana business that they wanted to establish. So there's really interesting questions about about these guys being a potential conduit of foreign influence in our political system.
We're almost out of time. Is Trump himself potentially implicated in the Lev and Igor case, particularly with reference to the donation to his super PAC? And if not, these stories are all very intriguing, but did they relate directly to the impeachment inquiry, which is mostly about pressuring Ukraine to launch investigations of Donald Trump's political rivals?
Okay, so the thing that was so interesting to me yesterday when Parnas's lawyer raised this argument about executive privilege, he was very clear, I can't make that argument. by implication, it can only come from the president and the White House. President Trump has been asked about Lev and Igor, and he said, "I don't know those gentlemen." So, if he were then to say, "I don't know those gentlemen, and they were subcontractors working on my behalf, and I hereby assert legal privilege in the impeachment probe," well, that is a hell of a twist to put your knickers in.
And also, on the issue of legal implications, well, the Southern District has already decided it cannot indict Trump. So we know that that is not the end line of their investigation.
The U.S. Attorney in New York.
The U.S. Attorney in New York. And in fact, that decision is what started the whole chain of events about the other court hearing yesterday about whether Trump can be prosecuted for anything or investigated for anything while he's president.
We're out of time. I'm going to be late for my next segment, but I can't resist. What are these companies, Mafia Rave and Fraud Guarantee? Both names sound so suspicious, but are they legitimate businesses of some kinds? And why are they called those things?
You know, I was trying to learn about Fraud Guarantee last spring because these guys had already kind of crossed our radar. And I'm like clicking onto the website, and it's like super spammy, and it's like a not secure website, and it basically doesn't look like a real business. I haven't been there in a while, so I don't know what it looks like now. But the name is exactly as funny as it sounds. Mafia Rave is
a nightclub, a beach club
on the coast of Odessa, and you know, great name for a nightclub, I think.
Journalism Guaranteed from Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz, co-hosts of WNYC's podcast, Trump, Inc. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have any concerns about what state the country is going to be in once this is all over? Give us a call and leave us a voicemail, and you might get to hear your voice on the podcast. The number is 844-745-TALK. Just leave us a message. Again, it's 844-745-TALK. 8255. We'll also take your general questions, thoughts, feelings, ideas, and anything else you want to share with us about what you're watching for in the impeachment inquiry. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon at WNYC.org.